Welcome to the Lumieres podcast. My name is Jody. I was going to read out a little script that I'd wrote, introducing myself and telling you all about what I do and who I am, and why I've created a podcast. Then I thought, no, you know, I'm going to try and be vulnerable. I'm going to go off piste, right in at the deep end, see what happens. You know, take a risk. So you're listening to the Lumieres podcast. This is the very first episode. Thank you for tuning in. I had an idea for this podcast maybe a year ago, something like that. I realized that I was quite handily connected to a whole range of really interesting people doing great things with their lives and putting out some really good energy into the world. And I thought I should connect these people up somehow. I'd really like to talk to them all. I don't have enough time. What's a good way for me to kind of connect with them and help them share what they've got to give? And then I thought about podcasts, and here we are. The very first episode today features the very lovely and inspiring human being that goes by the name of Jamie Morrison. Jamie is one of the best drummers in the world, really. If you're going to be honest, he's definitely one of the best drummers in the UK, as well as being a fantastic producer and an all-round superstar musician. He's a lovely man, as you will shortly hear. I met Jamie, years ago. We were both teenagers, pretty much coming to the end of our teenage years, and we just clicked straight off, and then we've hooked up kind of every so often ever since. He's now playing in a rock band, playing stadiums, flying all over the world, doing great things. And he very kindly agreed to come on and be the first guest on the show. So big thank you, Jamie. So you might be wondering, who am I? Who's Jody? Well, Jody, that's me. I'm talking about myself in the third person. I'm lots of things, really. I'm one of those people who finds it really difficult to do just one thing. I write, I play music, I'm also a drummer. I recently qualified as a healer. I'm doing some quite far out shamanic healing work. I do a few things, and it keeps me busy, and it keeps me from getting too attached and bored with one particular thing. And that's the way I like it, really. I feel like I'm pretty good at a few things, and it's nice to be able to have the opportunity to do those things and indulge those passions. So here's to keeping it mixed. This podcast is going to run bi-weekly, which obviously means every couple of weeks you'll get a new episode. This first episode with Jamie, and then we've got I just recorded a great little chat with the lovely singer-songwriter Carrie Tree, which will be upcoming in a couple of weeks' time, so you've got that to look forward to. Without further ado, I think we'll just drop right into the conversation with me and Jamie. This was recorded just before Christmas last year at Jamie's house and Jamie's studio in South London. We had a great chat, as you'll hear. If you want to keep in touch with what's going on the podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. We are at Lumieres Podcast. That's Lumieres Podcast. Same on Instagram and same on Facebook. And the website, if you want to check out the website, is www.lumierespodcast.com. Thanks, guys. Enjoy.
Okay, we're going.
We're here.
Hi, Jamie.
Jody, my brother.
So I first met you outside Leicester Student Union in what must be 2000 and... more than 15 years ago? No, 2004 maybe.
That's terrifying.
So this was a Lamb gig.
Lamb,
who they'd just done an amazing show.
Amazing show.
I came outside and you were handing out CDs.
You're kidding me.
With a lady.
Is that what I was doing?
Yeah, you were bigging up your musical project.
It was so hip hop. When you go to New York and you go to Times Square, you just can't move for people giving you hip-hop CDs. And I thought, whenever I go to New York and I see that happen, I go, man, I'm glad I never done that. And I have actually done that.
Yeah, but you did it in such a nice way.
Did I ask for money?
I don't... Actually, do you know what? I can't even remember if I paid for the CD or if you just gave it me.
I think I can't imagine I'd ask for money. It would be cool if I did.
But what I remember distinctly was your energy about it was really, you were really enthusiastic about your music. And I got the CD, paid or not. And then I came home and I listened to it that night before I went to bed.
Yeah.
And it was the Manzarek EP,
yeah.
Which I still love to this day.
No way.
It's such a beautiful record.
No way.
And yeah, I remember I was like, wow, this is lovely music. It's got such a sweet little vibe. You know, all the elements are really nicely put together.
Yeah.
I think I messaged you about it or something and just said, this is sweet, man.
Mate, I can't believe that.
Yeah.
I actually forgot that. I have a different memory of that evening of meeting you, but it's not as interesting as what you've just said. I think that's nothing's changed in terms of enthusiasm and energy. But what was I wanting to say? We named Manzarek after Ray Manzarek
from the Doors.
Yeah, that was one of our things. And I always remember that band, or you know, our friends in that band. That was one of the first things that felt like you would. One of the first things that it gave a glimpse of what sort of artistic feelings I had or we had as a band, because everything else prior to that was cover bands or trying to be like something else. And that was the the first thing where it was that we were genuinely doing something from our hearts, and it was interesting, and it was kind of, it was unique to us. And there was no we got to be like AC/DC or we got to be like Radiohead. This was like, this is just what these four people do. And that was interesting. And I'm glad that happened then when I was young, because that sort of set the tone for everything else that happened after.
So how old were you at that point? You were a teenager.
I had to be. I mean, we're the same age, aren't we?
I think I'm a couple of years your senior, maybe.
Well, I can't even remember.
I think you were about,
I could drive,
17, 18?
17, 18, yeah. I drove there. I drove to that gig. I just passed my test, I believe. And we drove, and I drove to that gig in Leicester. And and we have stayed in touch since then.
Pretty much on and off.
You're here in my house. I remember hitting you up a year ago, and I remember hitting you up a few times. And I love that that's happened.
It's
music
nice,
made
isn't
that
it?
Happen.
It's a little thread.
Because no, I don't have that with anyone else, really, from that era of my life.
Oh, that's interesting.
Nah.
You're not in touch with the Manzarek guys so much,
sadly
though.
Sadly not.
And oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that record could be put out again, you know?
Yeah, well,
I listen to it most, you know, a couple of times a year, and I think that is just such a nice record.
Now we've said it. You've got to speak things into existence.
Yes.
Now said, I know that some people who'll be hearing this will definitely want to hear Manzarek now. So let's think about re-releasing Manzarek.
Maybe we can play a little, maybe I can work a little track into the podcast.
Yeah, we're going to put a little bit right now. Say it's not true.
Thank you.
Boom. There you go. There we go.
Wasn't that great? See?
Didn't you enjoy that? I haven't heard that since I was 15 years old. I remember being in the studio and, you know, when you're young and you go to the studio for the first time, it's one of the most amazing places, but also very terrifying. And it was one of the first times that I felt like I was in control of the moment. I remember manipulating the drums, like putting a cloth on the drum, or just simple things at that time I thought were devastating, devastatingly groundbreaking, but you know, they were to me.
And well, that said though, mate, like I remember listening to some of the drum sounds on that record. I was like, you know, that's emulating electronic processed drums, yeah, but he's not used any electronics.
Pure acoustic, exactly. Yeah.
And that's what I always was like, this is really nice. It's really original. It's really unique. It's your own take on how to do things. I remember going to, I can't remember how or why, but I went to stay at your house once.
Yes, you did. And my parents' house.
Yeah, yeah. In Cambridgeshire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And your mum cooked bacon and eggs in the morning. And she was like, this is Jamie's favourite breakfast. I always make it for him.
Oh, man.
I remember going up to your room and there's just drums everywhere and bits of broken cymbals and like experiments. And I just thought, wow, this is great. You know, he's not just sitting and playing the drums. He's experimenting with how they sound and how to change
100%.
That.
100%. I mean, I spent more time doing that. I built up a sort of a technique from hard practice and a lot of education with teachers and whatnot. And I mean, I was obsessed. I mean, obsessed is the exact word. I mean, absolutely obsessed with drums. And then there was a point where after I had a sense of foundation, I just wanted to present them in a way that were different. I just knew that all my favorite beats are everyone's favorite beats for a reason, you know, boom, boom, cha, boom, boom, cha, or however, whatever beat you're saying. I don't want to change that because that works great. But if I can change the way we hear it, the way you present it, that's where I thought my angle would be. And I just found it invigorating to spend time trying to find new ways to play, to make the drums sound different. Even from an early age, I always found it confusing that, for instance, as a guitar player, you can plug in a pedal and have a different sound, or you know, and you can do things like that. But with drums, they have been untouched since the beginning of drums. And I always was confused that why we have never developed that. You know, we have had things like you can play with hot rods or brushes and that changes the sound obviously, but it never really went deeper than that. So I was always fascinated why there had been no progression with sound and drums. So I thought, well, I'll go and explore that. And to this day, some of those experiments that I did back then are used regularly when I hit the studio with people. Yeah, definitely.
I remember you mentioning way back as well that you wanted to kind of try and market a snare drum adaptation with ping pong balls or something.
Exactly, yeah. So I had I filled up a drum set with ping pong balls and it just had this incredible sort of distorted, echoey thing. Very unique, very cool. But once you'd committed to putting ping pong balls in your drum, there ain't no going back. So the rest of the time was spent, how can I turn these on and off? How can I make it so I can have the normal drum sound, but then go to ping pong balls without having to take the drum head off, put the ping pong ball, put the drum head back on? That ain't going to work in a gig. So I'm still trying to solve that problem. But I actually did come really close, unbelievably close. I mean, I was experimenting with sticking metal strips to ping pong balls so I could work with magnets, but that weighed down the ping pong ball. Honestly, I went into great detail here.
Why do you think there aren't more drummers doing that kind of experimentation? Like, people seem really happy to just play drums, and you know, that kind of experimental aspect to being a drummer, it doesn't seem very popular.
Yeah, I mean, it's popular in it. I mean, forward thinking sonics is a popular thought process, definitely, but with technology. Technology has, there wasn't the same technology or access to that technology when we were that age. Like the Roland SPD, which is a great tool to you can put your own sounds in there, and it's so easy to use, and that wasn't around, and that sort of opened up a whole world to people playing live with unique sounds. The drum kit was untouched. All that's happened here is we've brought in another piece of gear. So I think that because technology happened in that way, and studio experimentation, like working with effects or whatnot, that's been going on forever. Like Phil Collins, that famous drum sound, Radiohead have been touching on interesting sounds like that. So I think technology stopped us progressing the actual drum kit because, you know, it is a perfect instrument. It's perfection. Well, you don't need to. So maybe you don't need to change what's perfect and just bring in these new pieces of kit. So I think that, you know, we have got that thought process of looking for different sounds a lot. I see it a lot. It's just that it's coming from technology now. And you know, you're limited purely by your imagination, and now that's your only limit. So, you know, now we've got a way to realize that with the Roland SPD or any of these electronic drum sets that you can incorporate into your acoustic set. The world's opened up, man. You know, and so in many ways I've stopped experimenting so much on drums, and I felt like I've got to a great place with that, and now my experimentation comes really in the studio and little bits live. With the Stereophonics, it's very you know, there's a 20-year history there, and you know, 15-16 years where I wasn't there, and you know, when I'm more about trying to instead of recreate a sound or whatnot, I'm trying to recreate a spirit, like a vibe of Stuart Cable and Javier, and I'm trying to recreate that feeling of Word Gets Around or Performance and Cocktails, or you know, that's what my focus is on now with drumming, is trying to just create that energy of what it was like then when they actually did it, as opposed to me being a new drummer in a band and this is the way I play this song. This is the way I play it. You know, this is my vibe. I'm not really into that. I want it to be that vibe.
That's always been your thing, though, as I remember, like playing for the artist, playing for the song, not about you know, showboating.
Well, I remember your drumming style, and I remember your vibe, and we've got similar attitude, and it's just sympathetic musical playing. You know, you know, a deep rooted love of music, not drums.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And where the beats fits into that musically, not just to keep time.
And not just to be a drummer. Mm. You know, I'm a musician, you're a musician. That's it. I've always early on I classed myself as a drummer, and that was it. But now I really don't class myself as a drummer. I'm a band member and a musician.
Interesting.
That's it. You know, I'm a musician. I'm an artist. Like, I produce music. I produce music.
So going back to Stereophonics, like that's a massive, you know, a massive band, and a band we were listening to when we were teenagers.
Absolutely.
That we grew up with.
Absolutely.
You know,
unbelievable.
Posters on the wall, that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
How did it feel when you got the call?
Oh. I mean, it'd been an incredible journey, a roller coaster of a journey up until my life before the band, before the Stereophonics, had been an amazing experience, and it really set me up for what I'm experiencing now. So I remember that the Noisettes, we'd supported the Stereophonics at the Albert Hall, a Teenage Cancer Trust show, 2009, and I met the boys backstage after the show. Didn't meet Kelly Jones. I met the rest of the band, and it was amazing. You know, all these memories and feelings of watching them as a kid, and you know, I was in a Stereophonics cover band, and it's all
wow. That's a nice twist.
Crazy.
That's great.
And at that point, the Noisettes were. That was 2009. So we'd had "Don't Upset the Rhythm," which was a it was a huge hit in the world, I think, definitely in England and Europe. And we were flying high. That was what I was doing. And, you know, I was very proud of that. And so I'd met them there. And then I'd met Kelly's future wife as she worked for MTV, and we'd done a few MTV things. So I'd met her as well. And then I met a guy who produced or co-produced Dakota. So I met these three people, and the Noisettes had ended for me around 2010. And I remember sitting in this house around 2011, 12, I believe. And I'd seen that Javier had left the Stereophonics. And because I'd met the boys, minus Kelly, I'd met Jackie, his future wife, and I'd met Brad, the producer, I felt comfortable dropping a text and saying that I'm around, and if they need any drums for studio, I'm here. Mm. 5 minutes later, I get a text from Kelly Jones, which is just ridiculous in its in itself. And I remember the day; it was a beautiful day. The Olympics were just about to start, and you know, I just remember everything about that day. And he said, "Come down for a jam next week. Learn these songs." And it was like Bartender and Wouldn't Believe Your Radio. Local Boy. I was like, I already know these, mate. I already know these songs. Send me some more. He goes, it was just laughing. Ha 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 ha. Good answer. And next week I went there, John Henry Studio up in Caledonia Road. I was the first to audition, and we just started playing. And I just remember having a moment where I'm in this rehearsal room, and Richard Jones, Kelly Jones, Adam Zindani, and I'm the drummer. And it was like, wow, this feels right. To me, it felt right. And everyone just started laughing, and we were having fun, you know, and we were talking about, it was just like we'd known each other for years. And,
was it a bit surreal?
It was crazy surreal. It was fun. You know, it felt natural. It felt really right. And it sounded great. Mm. And so I since learned that Kelly didn't want to hear any other drummers after that, which made me feel really great. But the rest of the boys made it was respectful to listen to all the other people who were playing, quite rightly so. Kelly did point out that when I left, I did say that I hoped all the other drummers weren't very good or something like that. But you know what? I really wanted to be in the Stereophonics. You know, I felt really after that play, you know, I hadn't been in a band for a couple of years. You know, my last band, Noisettes, you know, that was very much a band, but it didn't end great for me. And, you know, I was working between Noisettes and Stereophonics. I was working with artists like Duffy or Brian Adams, Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, and you know, a few really popular artists.
Yeah, they're big names.
Big names, but I just didn't find myself feeling comfortable in those scenarios. I like to create, you know. I'm not so much a really great at recreating.
Right, you know, so you never wanted to go down the session road.
I was there.
I mean, you went down the session road.
I've been there. I was there. And earlier on, before the Noisettes had occurred, that was everything I wanted to be. And then the Noisettes opened me up to a whole other world of being in a band and what that's like, and that sense of control you have as being a band leader or as part of a band. You know, I really found that that really works for me. And in between 2010 and 12, I sort of really didn't enjoy working with a few artists. I didn't believe them, and I can't play for you if you don't believe in yourself or don't even have an understanding of what you're trying to achieve. I can't work with that. I just don't know what that is, because I'm looking at you for inspiration to so I can be inspired to play, and then my inspiration will feed back into what you're doing.
Yeah,
you know, so if I'm not inspired, if you're not inspired, how the hell am I going to be inspired? This is your art.
Interesting.
This is your work. This is your art. If you're not inspired, I'm not going to be the, I can't do anything for you.
Yeah.
So I was just seeing that every single week, with the exception of like Brian Adams and Martha Reeves, who, you know, are the absolute real deal, come around not very often, that sort of thing. So when I first played with the boys in the band, that all those feelings weren't there. It was that my fire was, you know, it was relit within me, you know, and my enthusiasm for what a band is, I was like, yes, this is it. So I really hoped that they would want me to be in the band. And I remember being at Rack Studios recording for a wonderful artist called Christina Train, and sort of Nashville country music. And I was asked to visit the boys in the studio. And so after that recording, I got in a taxi and went down to the HQ. And we had a few gin and tonics, and Kelly just turned to me and said, "Do you want to be in the band?" And I was like, "Hell yeah." And you know, that's it, you know, just we've had not look back, you know. It's been amazing since, you know. The boys had a break, the first break in 15-16 years, and so we were just about to come back with a new record. That's the longest time away they've had from working and being in the public since the creation of their band, so it felt really nice coming in I with a new drummer and a new album, a new sound, a new energy. And it was a very successful tour, very successful album, a platinum selling album. And we followed it up with our number one album, Keep the Village Alive, which came out last year. And we finished that campaign, and we're actually, you know, almost finished with our new record. And it's sort of just gone.
Hit the ground running,
and it's just gone so quickly. And I've just felt like I've been there for forever. My other experiences, my other lives, like as a session musician, and my other life as the Noisettes, it doesn't even feel like me. It's such a bizarre thing. I have these memories of all these unbelievable things that happened in all of those, in the session life and the band life with the Noisettes. And it's, sometimes I feel like it's a movie I've watched.
But then, you know, those are experiences that in some way you had to go through to get to where you are.
Jody, you killed it. That's exactly it. I wouldn't be as perfect as I am for the Stereophonics
had you not.
Exactly. And they needed that. They needed someone who understands. Being in a band isn't all about music. It really isn't. It's more about, being a band is more about how you are as human beings when you're not on stage, because most of the time we're not on stage. Most of the time we're traveling to the stage, or, you know, stage is only 2 hours, or for us 2-3 hours a night. You know that there's a whole day there.
Yeah,
you know. And it's that relationship and it's all those things, and it's just how you conduct yourself. Like, as a kid, you know, I was wild, as you should be, you know, as a wild drummer, as you absolutely should be, you know, when you're in the position that I was in. You know, I had a record deal and we were playing punky, rocky music and we were very extravagant and, you know, it was a huge party. And at that age, I'm really glad I did that. I mean, that's not how I am now. Like, we play music in the band and we have a great time and we enjoy each other's company. And then I'll go back to the hotel and I have my studio with me in the hotels and I'll be making music. You know, I previously though, 10 years before, I'd be at a club, you know, partying or someone's house party or something like that, causing immense trouble. and I'm glad that that happened. But I really much more enjoy making things, you know, once we've made stuff on stage.
It's maturity though, isn't
it? Exactly.
You know, it's like it's progression, natural progression. When you're in your 20s, you know, everything's fun, you think you're gonna live forever and you just want to go out and, you know, cause a storm, like you say. And then you go through those experiences, you burn them off a bit.
Or you don't. We've seen so many.
I'm sure there's a few casualties.
I feel very lucky that I've got the ambition that I have and desire to create as I do, and it's never waned. I've always had this feeling.
And that's something that I'm kind of, you know, I'm particularly interested in. Like, you had a strong feeling from since you were a kid about drums, about being a drummer. Am I right in thinking you've never done another job?
No, never. I've been working as a drummer since I was 15, 16.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, to have that clarity of vision at that age and then follow it through.
Yeah.
You know, despite distractions of what society sometimes kind of tells us we should be doing in our lives, you know?
Totally.
So how did you, I mean, I'm trying to get at, like, how did you manage to maintain that clarity of, I'm, you know, this is what I'm going to do in my life.
Yeah.
How did you keep that focus?
Well, it has to start with my foundation, and because I had such a good foundation so early on, I was capable of doing things. I could be asked to go on tour with that artist or go to the recording studio and go and do that and do a good job, and that energy spread and more opportunities arise. So from an early age I was busy, and then the band happened and I was even busier, and all of a sudden I'm now 25 and I'm doing this and this is what's happening. And so I believe that my parents letting me practice for 11 hours a day of such an early age and not disrupt that and not have me go and do a paper round or focus on university or any sort of any education. I mean, they saw this kid now. My parents must have thought, there's this kid up in our house playing for 11 hours a day. That's weird, but he's not on the streets causing trouble. He's not burgling houses. He's also not studying history or music or geography or whatever he perhaps supposed to be. But he's doing that on his own. No one's telling him to do 11 hours a day. That must be something. So I feel like my parents letting me do that set me up with my foundation. So when I had opportunities, I was able to exceed what those artists wanted. And so I to this day am still asked to play on people's music that I worked with back then, you know, because I touched them and I brought something fresh to the table. And
they know you're going to put the hard work in, right? Because that's what you've been doing since day one.
Well, what, the artists?
I mean, they know that you've got a high work ethic. A high kind of quality threshold.
Even if they didn't know anything about what I'd done previous and their first experiences in me in the studio in that moment, I've brought something in that moment which they were like, didn't think that could be played like that, or that's very interesting. That's not what I thought. That's exceeded my expectation. This guy's cool. Going to use this guy again. Simple as that. And the band happened, took me away from working with lots of other people, the Noisettes band, and I want to get back to the question. And I feel like having such a good foundation set me up, and my dealing with the sense of the roller coaster vibe, which the music industry or any artistic industry is, it's a roller coaster. Mm. You're going to have great, amazing experiences, and then it's going to be down, it's going to be up, it's going to be all over the shop. Now, dealing with that is it's not a artistic thing. It's not about playing. It's nothing like that. That's a mental thing. And I have been lucky. I feel like one of my gifts is enthusiasm, like, and that's the thing that's kept everything. So having a foundation and having enthusiasm, the enthusiasm, I don't know, because I've had been through, you know, I've had an unbelievable ride, but good and bad. The enthusiasm never changed. Never changed.
And that's the thing that I remember from the first time I met you, was that level of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Which was, it stands out, you know, because a lot of people, they're just happy to play it cool, or, you know, they're not in it for the long haul. They're just in it for, because it looks good, or, you know, it's cool to be in a band.
Yeah.
But you had that like level of, this is my life, you know, this is on some level, this is serious shit.
Yeah.
You know, this
you
is
combine enthusiasm with ability and you've got something great.
Well, you're unstoppable.
You've got something amazing. Unstoppable is a word. And I mean, early on, a lot of the things that established me happened early on, when, you know, and I'm grateful they happened early on, because it sort of set the tone to what's happening now. This is sort of my second chapter, or my third chapter of my life, what's happening now. And it's all fed into what's happening now. All my experiences, good or bad, help me every day with this music industry. And I get up every day and I want to make music. I want to help people make music. I want to make things happen. I want to join the dots for people, whether it's me or not. That's just something that I've always done, and now it's just, I'm doing it on a bigger level. To me, I'm still the same as I was 16. It's just, I'm not playing the Water Rats anymore. I'm playing the O2 Arena, and it's not my mate's home studio, it's Abbey Road. But to me, I'm still got the same approach. It's still the same attitude. It's just that my surroundings are different.
So there's a groundedness though, that to you, that you must have been able to deal with that kind of, you know, because a lot of people put in those situations might become a bit overwhelmed, or you know, it might be too much for some people. But there's a level of like groundedness to you that feels that I feel like you can just take whatever comes and flow with it.
Well, that's true, but I was overwhelmed. But all those things happened when I was younger, so I experienced all that when I was younger. So now, you know, by the time I was 25, I'd been doing it for a long time, you know, and not as long as I was doing it now. But even then, I felt really strong. And I'd gone through those feelings of insecurities in the recording studio, or feelings of insecurity when you first start go and play for someone you've never met. I'd gone through that. I knew how to conduct myself in those moments. I knew how more to make everyone believe. Everyone's feeling that feeling.
Yeah.
Everyone. No, don't you think that everyone's above you? Yeah, we're all thinking the same thing. So I thought, if I be like this, it will make everyone else feel better. And if they feel better, I feel better. So by default, it helps me. Sounds better. Put that energy out there. It's putting that good energy out there is never going to hurt a scenario. It's only going to be good. It's only good. So I thought, this is that feels natural to me, to just express how I'm truly feeling. And at the beginning, might have come across a bit fruity, but you know, now that's just who I am. That's just who he is. That's who that guy is. That's who I am.
Yeah.
That's what I do. And it works really well for me. You know, it makes me, the output has been fantastic. You know, the music I've made, the music I've been part of, you know, it's it's fantastic. So it works for me. And it, that just knowing that gives me confidence to go further with my vibe. But yeah, I definitely had all those moments of insecurity early on and got them done and dusted. I still have moments where you have a little bit of self-doubt and whatnot, but you've got all these experiences in your mind where you can just sort of think about it for a second, take a step back and go, okay, here I am. This is what's important.
I've been through this before, or yeah. I can relate to a previous experience that's going to help me in this
moment. There ain't much that I ain't seen now. Mm. There ain't much I haven't seen in this music business.
Have you got any rock and roll stories?
Too many. Too many. Many that you think back at and go, ah, that's bad. That's embarrassing. But honestly, we've done it all. TV's out of windows, everything, you know. I don't think it's cool.
Mm.
I used to think that's cool. What I think is really cool is playing a great show, everyone loving it, going back and doing some more music. Because I know that that's the last thing that anyone would think that I'd be doing. But I will come back from rehearsal and I will start and I'll practice. You know, I've been practicing all day and then I'll practice more. That's just what I want to do. That just feels right to me. Mm. But back then, you know, you're reliving these books that you've read or these films that you've seen or these stories you've heard. And I just think it's cool to be you and me. That's what I like to do. I'm truly myself. When I was doing all those rock and roll antics, that wasn't me. I was reliving things that I'd thought I'd had to do, you know, and, you know, it could have really messed me up.
Mm.
I was very lucky that I'm strong enough to have and had a desire that and feeling that there was something bigger intended for me. And I was right. I'm now in the Stereophonics, you know, that's all the things that I did were in a way university for that. My college, that was college, all those things, college, university for my experience now, you know, and I passed and, you know, we have a great time and our art now speaks for itself. You know, the way that we are as a band, you know, you see us smiling, we're smiling. That ain't no act. We're happy to be around each other. I don't know many bands. In fact, I don't know any band. No, I'm wrong. I was going to say I don't know any band who's had a 20-year career who are still buddies. Genuine. But there are, you know, but it's very
it's
few.
Rare.
It's rare. Yeah. It's true. It's rare. Even bands now who have been around for 1 or 2 years, 1 or 2 albums, they are not enjoying each other's company. And I'm like, man, no, that's at some point that's going to mess you up.
Mm.
At some point, the fans are going to see that this ain't real.
Yeah.
We live in a world where we want real. We want real. We don't, you know, we want it as it is. And we want to decide whether we want to mess with it. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're on the front of the enemy or you get played on Radio 1 anymore. Doesn't matter. We now decide what we want to hear. It ain't about what's put in front of us now. And I think that the realist you can be, it's relatable.
And it's kind of, you know, in this age of transparency and social media, there's so much access to everybody and everyone's opinions. And, you know,
you can see right through those people who have been taking 35 photos. You know, you can see right through those ones where they're staging stuff. You know, it might work, but at the end of the day, it ain't real. So it ain't going to, you'll have a hit or you'll have a moment of success, but it isn't going to last. How can it last? It's exhausting to be you. It's not exhausting to be you. Become popular for what you do. You know, you can always redo that. You can always recreate that. That's you've got a formula for you. You ain't got a formula for
anything
else. It's
almost creating stress, you know. If you're trying to be something.
You're winning.
That you're not...
It's a losing battle. It's a losing battle. You know, you'll have moments of. I mean, each to their own as well. This is just how I've seen it. What was the question? What was the question?
I think we started on about your focus and clarity with what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. So I mean. I knew would go around.
It's great.
Would touch all these bases. I lost my trail of thought, Joe.
It's all right, mate. What I was going to ask you is I saw recently that you went back to your old school.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you about that because that must have been really interesting.
Unbelievable.
And I guess you'd not been back there in quite a long time.
No, I hadn't been back there. And this isn't like college or anything like that. This was like my school. You
so
know,
when
you
primary school?
Primary school into secondary school. Same building, same place, you know.
So prior to secondary school?
I think it was...
Like kind of like age 10, age 9?
10, right up until... Oh, I don't know. I'm terrible with ages. But I was definitely there at 10, 11, 12. And that's when I started drumming. And I always wanted to... I've felt really lucky to be doing what I'm doing every step of the way, right? And I always have to acknowledge how I got it. So firstly, I look after my parents because they are the reason why I'm here. Obviously, but the reason why I've got a career as a drummer and a musician... straight up because of their support. Secondly, school, that's where I got my first lessons. They introduced me to a drum teacher. They had a drum kit there. That's my parents and then that school is set me up.
So that was the first place that you came into contact with the drum kit?
Absolutely. So I always have to acknowledge that. I always acknowledge that if I wasn't at a good school or and they didn't have a music department, man, what could have happened there?
Mm.
So I acknowledge that, and I always wanted to let them know, or let whoever the kids are at their school at that particular time, let them know that anything is possible. You know, there's nothing different to me than to anyone else, you know.
How did that come about though? Did you decide to go there or did they invite you?
I wanted to do it forever. I've wanted to do it for so long because I felt so strongly how they helped me. And I thought it'd be good for the school, it'd be good for the kids. Let them know that you can do this. You can do this. It's all about your own energy, and you've got a great platform here. There's a great music department there, and you can make this happen. You can do this. It's not impossible. It might feel impossible when you're that age and you're in Cambridge, and I don't even know how it feels for kids these days with everything on social media and whatnot.
It's a whole different
ball game.
Yeah.
It's a different place.
Technology,
unbelievable. And I don't know how it feels for them, but I wanted them to know that it really is possible. You can be here and you can go off and do whatever you want.
Was it emotional for you?
Not emotional like that.
Nostalgic.
I went through the school, saw my class, gave them the touring kit, our last touring kit, you know. So it'd been around the world and it had a story, and I wanted them to feel that, you know. And it was amazing. I was only supposed to talk for half an hour. I think we talked for about 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
And I ended up playing. I wasn't expecting to play. And
how did the kids react?
It was remarkable, really. I mean, I've been doing a lot of clinics and public speaking this year. It was something I wanted to do, and it was the toughest audience I've had so far because they were so young, and I think they were scared. To be honest, half of them were scared and then half of them were the most enthusiastic people you ever met. And I think it was just an age thing. You know, who's this guy? He's got weird hair. You know, why is he giving us a drum kit? Or, you know, and then the other kids are like, whoa, this guy's in this band. Whoa, let's ask him questions and how we can be in a band. And
so, yeah, did they get to ask you questions?
Absolutely, yeah.
What sort of things did they ask you?
brilliant questions like... Have you ever hurt yourself on stage? Have you, you know, who's the most famous person you've met? You know, questions that you don't really ask yourself. And when you have to answer them, you go, yeah, gosh, I really did hurt myself on stage. Or yes, I have met blah, 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 and made you remember things that perhaps you don't really think about all the time. But it was a great, I was really happy because that kit was in a lockup doing nothing. Mm. Now that kit is inspiring kids. It would inspire kids, people anyway, you know, because it's a drum kit. But it's got a story behind it and a positive story behind it, a story which is obtainable because I'm the same as them. I was them. I was there in that same classroom.
And also you appeared before them physically, as it were. Mm. You know, you went to the school.
Yeah.
You're like...
They've got that memory attached to that.
And you made it real for them by saying, here I am, tangible. This is what I've done with
exactly.
this.
I think it's so important because we look on social media. They all must have social media. And then they see people getting in Ferraris and or... I don't know what you're on, but you see Ferraris or jets, or you see people sound checking in big venues and you think, God, maybe that's not possible to reach. You're probably never going to meet that person on Instagram. You're only going to see them through this portal, which is this is that, and they so you're only seeing what they want to give you. So I really went there it was a real special moment. We were in the same room, you know, I was in that class 20 years earlier or however many years, and now this is what I do, and all I did was work really hard and stay true to what I was trying to do. And my plan has never changed, you know. I've got one goal, you know, it's to be doing this every day. That's my only goal. Mm. And it's been that way ever since. So as I said earlier, that my the surroundings have changed. My attitude's the same. It's just that instead of doing there, it's now here. And I assume and I hope that that's how it will continue. But I wanted them to know that. And I've had that feeling for so long, and I felt really great. And that drum kit will live forever in that school. And it could inspire the next band, the next musician, anyone. Even if it was, there was kids who weren't musicians, weren't from music, who might have been sports or whatnot. And it's the same thing. It's the same inspiration. It's the same moment that could have been defining, like, yeah, you can do this.
It's such a beautiful gesture, you know.
I hope so. It really wasn't intended to be. I didn't tell anyone I was doing it, and my wife was telling me, wow, that's incredible, you did such a great thing today. And I didn't even think about it like that. I genuinely didn't think about it like that. I'd wanted it to do it for so long that I hadn't really thought about the repercussions or actually what it actually meant on a bigger level. Mm. You know, I just wanted to say thank you for the fact that I started my career there, really. I got to have drum lessons there, and the drum teacher was cool, you know, and the teachers were cool.
How was your first drum teacher? Because I remember mine pretty clearly. He was quite a crazy cat.
Crazy good?
Well, I mean, I hope he's not listening to this.
I hope he is.
he had some skills, and he also had some personal stuff going on that meant he kind of disappeared. And yeah, there was. Let's say it wasn't the best all-round influence.
Oh, well, that's a shame.
But then, you know, there were other people who came in his place who were fantastic. I remember there was a French dude who was a jazz drummer who came to the school, and he was just like this, and I'm not Jody, blah, 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 blah. And he was excellent. Yeah. So what about who was your first drum teacher?
Tom Reavy, an incredible human being, and I just remember that I wasn't allowed to play the drum kit for almost a year. I mean, he might think of it differently, but in my mind, I had started drum lessons and I didn't touch a drum set for a year. Mm. That's how I remember it. And what it meant, it was very clever, very clever. Because by doing that, in my class, there was 14 boys, right? 13 of those boys were drummers. 13.
Wow.
All of us were drummers, pretty much. So we would go... Every lunch, we'd go to the music room and set up a massive drum kit. We'd set up all the drum kits as one drum kit, and we'd play all day, all lunch and whatnot. Tom Reavy made it so I talk about foundation a lot. He made me do my paradiddles, my double stroke rolls, my single stroke rolls for a year. So when I actually sat on a drum kit, there was a sense of technique. And when I hit the drums, there was a pleasant musical drummy sound.
It sounds like he was almost developing a sense of respect for it before you were just let loose.
He was clever because it filtered out all the people that were just wanting to play drums. And because it's the most fun instrument in the music room, because you can, at any level, you can hit it and it relieves, it does something to you. You can't necessarily pick up a guitar and it sounds,
it's physical,
great straight away.
And also it's a physical, you know, immediately tangible experience. It's physical. Mm. Like the guitar seems a little bit more balanced.
You need to know your chords. You need to know chords. You need to know a bit of guitar to play guitar and make a sound. You can hit a drum and it be satisfying straight away.
Mm.
And everyone wants to play the drums, of course. Hence 13 drummers in a class of 14 boys, 13 of the boys were drummers, which is unbelievable. None of them are drummers now, and which is also unbelievable. But I thought that it was clever for Tom because, you know, people would lose interest in a year and go and do something else. And I didn't. And when I actually got to sit on the drums, it was working. There was a little bit of an ability there, and it was fun. It was really fun. And I imagine maybe if I'd got on the kit straight away and I couldn't do things, and I might have found it frustrating and then gone the other way. Mm. So when I actually got to play this beautiful instrument, there was something, it was cooking a little bit, you know, and then we worked from there and developed. But he was my drum teacher for years, like at least 5 years, and he took me to a great place. I since spoke to him. I spoke to him maybe 2 years ago, and I just thanked. It took me ages to track him down, and we tracked him down, and I just thanked him for instilling such a great attitude and a great foundation. And I still practice those rudiments that he taught me. I still find room for improvement, and I still see how much it helps when I actually sit down on a drum kit doing what he taught me. And I love that guy. I love that school. I love my parents because they're my parents, but because of the way that they let me be at that age. It must have been brave for them. Yeah. Very brave. Because
have you ever asked them about that?
No, and I should really. And they, you know, they'll hear this because they listen to everything that I've been doing. And I think they know, but we've never talked about it.
Yeah.
But I it's remarkable because I don't really know anyone else who had that sort of. All my friends as a kid, all my mates had to do like paper rounds and whatnot, and that could have just been disastrous. So the question ages ago was I don't know
about keeping your strength and determination that,
because I had such a strong foundation. I can't speak enough more highly about foundation. You know, you can't build your house on ice. You can't build it on sand. It has to be built on a strong foundation. My career has been built on a strong foundation, and at the end of the day, whatever scenario gets thrown at me, I can deal with it musically or personally or whatnot, and I'll always rise above it and deliver something in a way that you exceeded your imagination, and that's what I think I do. That's what I try and do, and that's how I want to be, you know. And so that's who I am, and that's it. And now, and we're here talking about it. And no one was interested 5-10 years ago, but I was still doing the same thing, talking in the same way, thinking in the same way. Mm. Obviously, it develops because the more you do something, the better you get at it. So every week, I'm getting better at everything I'm doing. I hope I strive for. All artists should be striving for that. But so, you know, That's that.
It's inspirational though, man. And I remember it's definitely, like I said, meeting you all those years ago and kind of following your progress over the years has been inspiring to me.
Amazing.
Seeing you as this person who's just had this, like, it's like an arrow. Looking up from the outside, it feels like, you know, you're this guy who's just got this goal or got this kind of drive, and he just went for it, you know. And it's not surprising to me that you're now where you are playing in Stereophonics, touring. It's if I'd, and a part of me almost kind of looked at you when I met you in those early days and was like, he's going somewhere.
No way.
It's very clear. Yeah.
I don't ever see that. I never see that. I'm too close to what's happening.
You wouldn't.
But it's amazing that that's the vibe came across then. It's amazing to hear that. It makes me feel great. But it's never been that's just my default energy.
Yeah.
That's never been the focus.
Sure, yeah.
It's amazing. So I'm so thrilled that it comes across.
It's something that radiates, I think. And, you know, the fact that you don't have any... you're very egoless, you know, you'll just kind of do what you love, and then that emanates out and it does inspire people.
Yeah.
What
you can't see at home right now is that I'm sitting in a throne and I'm surrounded by naked women and they've all got feathers and champagne everywhere. And you know,
is that a box of cigars?
Exactly. Servants, and we're in a castle. You know, and
I remember going to a clinic with Chad Smith from the Chili Peppers once years ago, and arrived there early so I could kind of meet him. And he took a few minutes there. Yeah, he's coming. He's on his way. We've been told he's on his way. And then this guy like saunters in from the back entrance, and he literally had an open champagne bottle in one hand and a cigar in the other hand, swigging out of the champagne bottle as he walked into this little venue in Birmingham. And he was like, "Oh, hey guys, is this the clinic, right?" He's
unbelievable,
absolute rock star moment.
Genius. I love that man. I recently met him for the first time in Japan or Korea. We were playing some shows with the Chili Peppers, and I texted Steve White, who's a famous drummer here in England.
He was doing the clinic. It was
with him, yeah. I saw that clinic, not that one you're at. I saw that clinic run, and I've got a story about that as well. I saw the Northampton show.
Yeah,
on that, Freddie G organized it. But I texted Steve to say that, you know, I'm here. I'd love to meet Chad. Can you see if Chad will swing by our dressing room? And we're about to play, and then the loudest knock in the history of knocks on the door, and then Chad Smith comes in, the man mountain, and you know, as a kid, you know, you can't as a kid drummer, you can't avoid Chad Smith. You can't avoid Chad Smith. He is everything. You know, he's just the perfect example of a rock and roll drummer, rock and roll human being. And
he was one of those early drummers that I remember thinking, right, this is the one, because I used to practice by just playing along to my favorite records, you know, early on, Rage Against the Machine, Chili Peppers.
Exactly.
But there was something about his groove, and it stood out. With a lot of other rock drummers, it was more about smashing it out.
He's gifted, man. He's a genius. He is a genius. He's a genius drummer. He's the great. He's one of the great. He's a modern. The way we think about John Bonham, you know, of this era, that's how we will think of Chad Smith. But he came into the dressing room. He spent 10-15 minutes with us, and it just, what a beautiful guy, totally inspired me. And then he sat at the side of the stage and watched us play, and as a drummer, you know,
that's exactly, gotta be a big moment.
Exactly, we don't need to say any more about that, but as a drummer, you've got Chad Smith sitting right next to you watching you, and you know how that feels. Like, so that felt like a big moment. After that had happened, and as I sit here now, I think, wow, that's a big drumming moment, you know. And no one in the audience knew that was happening, and it doesn't matter. But for me, that was a wow, I've made it moment. It so happens that Flea was on the other side of the stage thank the Lord I didn't know that he was there as well, because that would probably, I would have probably self-combusted. Spinal Tap moment. But amazing guy, amazing inspiration to me. And Kelly was telling me a story when they supported Chili Peppers in 2001. They were on tour in Europe and they would be playing Bartender and the Thief, and then all of a sudden it would sound like a train is coming through the building. They'd turn around and Chad would be playing along with them on his drum kit.
What, live? As live, they were playing the show?
As they're playing the show. They'd just turn around and Chad's joined them. And then they told me a story about how they were just hanging in the dressing room, and they, we always play AC/DC just to get us pumped up, you know, and the boys were playing AC/DC, and Chad walks past and he got so excited he ripped the door off the hinges and threw the door out of the dressing room. This is how it was told to me. And then apparently
it sounds like the Incredible Hulk.
Exactly. And then a guy, he was so pumped up to hear AC/DC that he ripped the door off the hinges. And then a guy with a clipboard, like an accountant, walked past and just started counting up how much it cost.
The damage.
And they were like, it wasn't us, it was Chad. I loved that story. So when I combine that story with the champagne bottle and the cigar coming through Birmingham, you get a sense of who that guy is.
And I've still got a signed snare skin on my wall, and nice. It says, Jody, you're a stud, Chad Smith. I was like,
you know, and those memories, man, that is it. You know, that moment that he gave you, that lasts forever. And he can't really know what that energy that he's putting out. And so I hope that I get moments of that energy with other people, you know, that, you know, that's a great example of inspiring a human being, you know. Maybe, you know, we don't all need to be drinking champagne and doing cigars. I mean, I certainly tried it. It didn't work for me, but it, you know, he's responsible for a lot of my rock and roll antics back then. Him and Keith Moon, and I'm lucky that, you know, I just ain't that guy.
Yeah.
I'm just not that guy. That's fair enough though.
And that's, of course it is.
That's fair enough. I'll leave that to Chad.
Yeah.
And Keith Moon.
Sounds like he's nailing it, you know.
Chad's flying the flag for rock and roll right now, and I love that because it means that I don't have to. Straight up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could talk a little bit more.
Have
or
you got any more questions? I would love to answer more questions.
Okay.
We've
been going about an hour.
Yeah.
How's your day?
I'm good. Yeah. But ask one question, and I'll probably answer it in 10 different ways. If you've got any more questions,
I'm interested in how you've moved into doing production. You've been talking about this new artist you've been working with, and I had a listen to some of the tracks, and they sound, I mean, the production's awesome for one point. It's very interesting. You can hear the rhythmical, the little layers and the little sounds. Really, really interesting. So I'd like to, maybe you can talk a bit about how you kind of approach production and how you've worked with this. I forget the name right now.
Elka is the artist, Elka, I believe, that you're referring to. I think that when I was in bands, in band practices and whatnot, I would always feel where things should go. And I've always felt like I've got a strong instinct for song, particularly a great song. I couldn't articulate it musically. You know, on my instrument, I could only inspire by the way I played. I wouldn't necessarily be able to, after we'd played, go, can we try it in this way or this way? I wouldn't necessarily know how to articulate that. So but fortunately, because I was in a band, the general synergy of a band, you know, you end up fulfilling musical your musical ideas just by default. You know, you play with people enough, they can feel where you're pushing and what you're trying to do. And but when the band ended for me, that band, the Noisettes, I still had those feelings, but I didn't have any way to execute them because I didn't have musicians around me. So, and I was only a drummer. So I was sitting in this room now, and this room's full of instruments. So I'd had these instruments my whole time. I'd always buy stuff on tour and whatnot. And it was more so I could have stuff around when a guitar player came to my house or like that. I wanted to facilitate action. I wanted to facilitate art being created by having stuff to create on when you're here.
Mm.
Because I know that my buddies wouldn't bring a guitar or an amp. They would come round, but they ain't going to bring anything. Cause that's just how a lot of people are. So I've always had stuff. So when the band ended for me, I'm sitting in a room full of instruments, which I don't really know how to play. I thought, well, this is the time to learn how to play them. So that was the first port of call, is actually just stepping away from drums for a moment and looking at the piano and acoustic guitar, electric guitar, bass, and learning how to play them.
You hear that said so often, don't you, about the value of, especially for drummers, learning the musical instruments.
Oh, mate, I say now that I could practice for 5 hours on drums today, or I could write a song. And I guarantee the act of writing a song will make me a better drummer than if I practiced 5 hours at this point in my life.
Sure.
At this point in my career, and no, my life, not my career. At this point in my life, I can learn more from making a piece of music than I can from actually an isolated session on drums.
Mm.
And so in 2010, when I started to pick up other instruments and then I'd go and play in a session or play drums for someone, I found myself operating on a slightly higher level than I'd ever had done before. I was listening on a deeper level. I was, you know, I was foreseeing how things could happen, and I was leaving space with the intention that someone else would be filling that, as opposed to a year prior I might fill that space up and then the potential for something magic to happen has since gone. And I would foresee those moments, and it was wonderful. I really did feel like I was becoming a better drummer and a better musician. So I would go incredibly excited. So I went further with that. You know, I went further with piano and guitar, and then I started recording, and it's a deep conversation, but I discovered this book in 2007. This book, it was a man called Drew from Alabama, and it was his notebook, and he was around in the 40s, and I found it in this suitcase, and I decided to turn his notebook into an album.
Was this so where you found the notebook, was this in this country or
it was in New York?
In New York.
Yeah, I'd lost my luggage, got lost on the flight over, so I had to buy a whole new set of stuff at the start of this tour, and I bought a suitcase, I bought a few jackets, and when I got back to where we were staying, I see in the lining of this case there was this notebook written on the spine, Drew from Alabama. I since know a lot about this chap now, and but briefly, having that notebook and having these instruments and having a space to record, not having a band to make music with, I used that notebook as a way to just start making things, you know. And then I'd invite friends round to sing, you know, and take a page out of the book and write lyrics inspired by that and whatnot. So that was my first experience as producing music, and I just felt really good about it. It just felt really natural, and I record every single day, and it helps on every level, from being able to communicate with the boys in the band, or even just to exercise. I love every form of music, so I love hip-hop and I love dance music, but I'm never gonna bring that necessarily to the Stereophonics table, because it's just not what we do. So it's great that I get to exercise those feelings there, and then I can
output for those.
Yeah, I think it's healthy. Mm. I think it's healthy, and it's been. I'm very grateful for the Noisette, because I'm so glad to not be in it anymore. Because if I hadn't been, if that hadn't stopped for me, I would never have pursued recording, I would never have pursued a lot of the things I'm doing now. And I would have just been that guy in that band. And now I'm a well-rounded musician and a very well-rounded human being. And that's because of something I never expected to happen. And it's a testament to this industry or this life where you can never predict what's going to happen tomorrow, in the next hour. All you can do is the only thing that you can do, that you can control, is how you deal with it and how you react, and
moment by moment.
Exactly. And all, you know, it's recording and production has changed my life, and it's made me incredibly confident. And I just love when coming off tour or after a show, come into my studio or working in the hotel room and just making something. And I've now got I've picked up like-minded human beings along the way, and we have a great time. Like Elka, she'll be here in a few hours time, and we'll make music for the rest of today. You know, I don't know what we're going to make, but we're going to have a great time doing it. And that's my focus, to make great art. You make great art, great things will happen. My focus isn't about money or chart success. My focus is on making great shit. If you make great shit, all that stuff will happen. Straight up. All those things are going
to
happen.
And you can extrapolate that to any area, really, can't you? It's absolutely, you know, whatever your interests are, whatever your passions are.
Absolutely. My dad always used to say that Tiger Woods, the famous golf player / adulterer,
yeah,
but would always say, the more I practice, the luckier I get. And I always remember that, you know, because the more I practice, the more things seem to happen. And I like that. It's something that we control as well. Getting up and doing something, we can actually do that. We're responsible for that. We're responsible for what we do in our day to a degree. If you've got a job and whatnot, you've got to do your job. But when you've got your downtime, you can either sit down and watch TV, or you can get up and do something, right? And that's something we can control. And you've got to make the most of that, man. You've got to make the most. You've got to take that and run, because no one is going to give you anything. They're not going to give you a record deal. They're not going to give you a number one album. They're not. You've got to go and get it. You've got to go and make that happen. You've got to bring it to yourself. You've got to be open for those things to happen. You've got to make that energy happen. And it, you know, it's like a magnet. You the stronger you get, the more chance you're going to bring that success to yourself. It can't be your focus. It has the art, the creation has to be the focus. I really believe that has to be the focus.
Without any kind of end result in mind, you're creating just because it's the pure act of creating what makes you happy.
That's the best. Often there is an act. There is like a reason to it. Like there might be, oh, you've got to make an album, but the best is when you're just making stuff. And so Drewford, Alabama for me was that. And if you want to make a song, Hollow, which is something I released this year, which was just music I'd been making, which I felt, what's the point in making if it just sits in the computer? What's the point in that? So I just I entitled it, If You Want to Make a Song, Hollow. And I said to people, if you want to turn any of these things into song, or if you want to make a video for it, if you want to do anything, if you want to sample it, do it. Just holler back. If you want to make a song, holler. And I just felt like, you know, why not? Why the hell not? I can either do that, or I can do nothing and it just stays on these hard drives and never gets heard. To me, that ain't what art's about. Art should be heard.
But that's almost, that's great. I love that. And it's enabled by technology. You know, these days that you can do something.
You can
like
do that. So true. You can have your own label. You can get, I mean, my music is, you can get it on iTunes everywhere in the world. You can buy it anywhere in the world. You know, that's an incredible thing. It's amazing, and it's opened up so much. It's also closed a lot of situations, but you know, I see it as a blessing. And
the fact that you can put this stuff out, make it available, it's over the internet, it's worldwide. Someone in another country, thousands of miles away, can take a beat, take a sample, exactly, make some tunes. That's, you know, that's pretty magical.
It's amazing. It's ongoing. So those, I just felt like, why does it have to end here? Why? I could have put it out and just put it out as, this is a bunch of EPs. Well, no, put it out and see if anyone else wants to do it. See if there's no full stop at the end of it. You guys can take it and do whatever you want. You can enjoy it for what it is, or you can go and turn it into something else. I just thought, once again, we're only limited by these imaginations that we have. So I do, if I had that idea, it felt right, and I went for it.
Have you had any responses?
So much response. And and I'm going to do another series of, if you want to, I dropped, I think, 6 EPs. I'll drop another 6 next year, you know, because this music, I make music every day, every single day, you know, and if it doesn't get placed with an artist, or if it doesn't fit with the Pop Morrison or Boy Genius work that I'm doing, which is my own music, then I don't want it just to be sitting gathering dust, like my drum kit which I gave to the school. I don't see how that has any help to people. It's the same with this music.
It's keeping it fluid, though, isn't it? Yeah. It's like moving things around, letting things flow off to the next the next place they're going to live.
Anything can happen now. My hope is that Kanye will sample something, or you know, that's my, seriously, like, my hope is that Kanye will sample it and turn it into something he's doing. That, why not? That can actually happen now. It couldn't happen before I didn't release it. Now that can happen. So
it's expanding possibilities, isn't it?
Exactly. And that's it. And I'm always trying to find new ways to do things. And next year, I've got so much cool stuff coming out for myself. There'll be Stereophonics activity and whatnot. And it's just very exciting. And it feels right. It doesn't feel overwhelming. It feels very natural. It's working for me. And I'm happy. I'm very happy. I'm a very satisfied musician, very satisfied drummer. I feel inspired. I'm glad to hear that I'm inspiring people. But straight up, I'm more inspired. Like, I am excited by what's happening here in this room every single day, in my head every single day. And I just want to continue, you know, and I hope that it's received like it's being received, which has been really well. And I'm simply not going to stop, you know, touch wood. I ain't got no reason to stop.
I believe you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jamie,
yeah.
Thank you so much, man.
Thank you, brother.
You are an inspiring fellow.
As you are, my friend.
Everyone has just heard. how can people find out about what you're doing?
Well, I am very active on Twitter and Instagram, and I have, which is Pop Morrison. And I have my website, popmorrison.com, which is everything I do. And if you just hit me up on Twitter, though, that's pretty much my daily activities. I'm really into that social media thing now. It's taken me a few years to, but I'm there. I understand it. It feels right. And I love sharing my journey with people. And so hit me up there. And I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I feel very proud to be the first person that you've interviewed. And that's it.
Thank you so much.
No, Jamie. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
So there you have it, Mr. Jamie Morrison. I hope you enjoyed listening to that conversation. Yeah, that's it for today. Thank you to Jamie once again. Thank you to Ben Chasney, aka Six Organs of Admittance, who's kindly allowed us to use the music for one of his songs for the intro and outro to this podcast. Thanks also to Drag City Records, his record label. And the song is called Light of the Light. and it's available on his 2011, I think, record, Sleep on the Floodplain, which is a beautiful acoustic guitar record. Kind of starts out real simple and goes off into some weird and wondrous soundscape. So if you like this kind of stuff, then I would definitely recommend checking out that record and checking out Ben's website, which I think is www.sixorgans.com. And Drag City Records is www.dragcity.com. Thanks also to my friend Pete for helping me out with some audio assistance. And that's it. Have a great couple of weeks. See you soon. Bye-bye. We found our way. The light.